Good morning, everybody. Thanks for getting here bright and early, ahead of our usual time, where this committee usually does not meet at 8:30. So I'm glad everybody was able to get here. A quorum is present. I'm calling the meeting to order. Health, finance, and policy, and a quorum is present. We have three sets of minutes to approve. So Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, I'd move the minutes for all three, if we can do them all together, or do you have to do them one at a time?
I think we can move them all together. So we have March 15th, March 16th, and March 21st that are all in your packets. So I'll give everyone just a moment, since we have three of them. Is there any discussion to the minutes? March 15th, March 16th, and March 21st. Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and those three sets of minutes are approved. So, members, today we are going to take up House File 2323, Representative Pinto. And just by way of a little bit of procedural explanation, so this bill was introduced with a number of clones, and the 2323 is the clone that is before our committee, and Representative Pinto has been working on the bill through other committees and other clones, and so we're going to adopt the the DE1. There is a DE1 amendment to 2323, and that represents the updates from all the other committees. So I'm going to move, on behalf of Chair Pinto, I'm going to move adoption of the DE1 amendment to put the bill in the catch-up shape, we could say. Is that correct?
It is, Madam Chair.
All right. Oh, right. And so, yes, thank you. Gosh, it is early, isn't it? So I'm going to move that House File 2323 be laid over, and then I'm going to move adoption of the DE1 amendment, and then Representative Pinto will explain it in the form that it currently exists through coming through other committees. So all in favor of adoption of the DE1, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails, and the DE1 is adopted. So Representative Pinto, to the bill as amended.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thanks, members. House File 2323, as amended, contains a proposal from the administration to establish a Department of Children, Youth, and Families. As the Chair noted, with the DE1, it also contains a number of improvements to that original proposal that have come about as the bill has made its way through, I think, five other committees before this one. This is a proposal that builds on a lot of history, a lot of work over a number of years, through a series of prior proposals, will allow us to have an agency structure that really allows children and families to be at the center of important budgetary and other decision making. There's a presentation by the administration that I think, Madam Chair, may make sense to just pivot to that to sort of describe it. Of course, I'll be around to answer questions and discuss, but that may be the right next step.
Do we have someone here to do that?
I'm not sure who the first person is from the commission. I guess it's Commissioner Harfstead, Madam Chair.
Good morning to you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Liebling and committee members. Can you hear me with this mic?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah, it's not great, but we can hear you.
Hi. Okay. There we go. My name is Jody Harfstead. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. I'm pleased to be here today to speak in support of this bill, creating a new Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Our state depends on the success of Minnesota children, youth, and families. While Minnesota ranks as a top state to live and work in, this is not yet true for every Minnesotan, as you've all heard. Our systems have not led to equitable outcomes for our children, and today race, zip code, and income are too often determinants of opportunity. We must embrace opportunities to think differently and improve the effectiveness of service delivery in our current systems for children and families who need them most. I've known since I started as commissioner 3 years ago that the governor and lieutenant governor were considering following suit with 22 other states and creating a separate agency for children, youth, and families. You may have heard me testify in the past with concerns about a Department of Early Learning, which I felt would be too small to be a smart way to organize state government after having to add HR, finance, legal, and compliance functions to a relatively tiny agency. What makes this year's proposal different is it would create an agency with sufficient size and scope to elevate child, youth, and family priorities and funding needs and make more sense for the support functions. This change, along with the proposal for a direct care and treatment agency, also leaves the Department of Human Services well positioned to carry out our core mission as then primarily the state's Medicaid agency. This was so important to DHS that I brought back Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson with over 35 years of state government experience, who started his career in Children's Services and has held or managed every function in DHS over the years, in a post-retirement option to serve on the interagency committee that drew up the proposal and is laying out a plan to work out the details over the next 2 years. We look forward to working with you and others to discuss the details of this proposal as session continues, but I want to reiterate my strong support and excitement about this proposal to make a generational change in how we organize the work of state government to truly make Minnesota the best place for all children to grow up. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Commissioner Harpstead. Next on the list, I have Pete Brown.
Oh, is it, are you going next?
Or Ms. Bailey, whoever's... Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. My name is Erin Bailey, and I'm the Executive Director of the Children's Cabinet. We do have some slides, but they're in your packet, so I will just keep rolling with it in the interest of time. The Children's Cabinet, housed within Minnesota Management and Budget, refers to the convening of the state's commissioners around children and youth.
Ms. Bailey, if I could just interrupt you. Can you plug it in and do the slideshow? Because we do have people watching remotely and so on, and if we don't do it through the system, they can't see what we're doing. Okay, well, my bad. If it doesn't work, then we'll just go ahead and...
With the computer, but...
Okay. Oh, I see. All right.
Desk view.
Didn't know there was a thing.
Can you email it over here? How do that work?
Well,
or just pull it up online.
Right. Ms. Bailey, why don't you just go ahead and we'll just do it this way. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Chair Liebling and members of the committee. I'm excited to be here today to present the Walls-Flanagan proposal to create a new cabinet-level Department of Children, Youth, and Families through a planned transition process. This process reimagines state government by providing an opportunity to better center children in our state government systems. I'm grateful to be here today with Commissioner Harpstead and Assistant Commissioner Brown and other state leaders who will share more about this proposal. and who have co-led the decision to propose this child-centered agency and developed a proposed scope and transition office for our plan. Our presentation will include a brief background overview of the history up to this point and the proposal. We are excited about the moment we are in, what is possible. We believe that if we want different results for our children, we need to do things differently. The why behind this proposal is the 1.4 million children who live in our state. One-third of these children live in lower-income families, and children are our most racially diverse age group in our state. They are a priority here, they are a future, and our overall competitiveness and well-being depends on their success. Yet we do not have a cabinet-level agency who has the job of focusing on this population, on the challenges before them, their families, and their communities. The programs and systems that support them exist within other agencies with competing priorities. For years, and in some cases decades, as Commissioner Harpstead mentioned, we've heard about the need for an early childhood agency, that this community needs a dedicated agency. We've heard that some agencies are too big. We've heard that youth need a clearer voice in our systems. Families, local service providers, and community leaders have been asking for coordination, for engagement, and culturally responsive programs that meet the needs of children throughout their development. The administration has doubled down on this work, listening, learning, and leveraging the Children's Cabinet and its leaders to center children in our decisions and to improve our coordination. With learnings from governance reports, cross-agency work, OLA reports, and other states, the case for additional alignment is clear. It's time for Minnesota to create an agency centered on children similar to the governance structure in more than half our states. There's history to build off of and learn from in Minnesota. In 1995, the legislature established the Department of Children, Families, and Learning. This department was created to replace the Department of Education with a broader focus and encompassed K-12 education in its scope. In 2003, the Department of Education was reestablished and distributed the other programs back to their home agencies. Yet challenges continued to be lifted up by families and communities, and a 2010 task force recommended a cabinet-level office for early childhood. The Office of Early Learning was created. The proposal before you is different and more in line with states across the country. Over the last 4 years, our state has built in action-oriented cross-agency tables that focus from prenatal to young adulthood, driving coordination and problem-solving. We received the federal preschool development grant that started with robust engagement process to develop a family-informed statewide childhood strategic plan. These efforts and more have built for the moment of now. With feedback and partnerships and strong alignment across our leadership in the state, we want to move along this continuum to a more aligned state agency structure. Related to the governance of children's programs, there are three models: consolidated into new agencies, consolidated into existing agencies, or coordination across agencies. States have been moving to more child-focused agencies, with some focused on early childhood specifically and others including a more whole family approach. Washington State is one consolidation model we have examined. The state consolidated across a broader spectrum of child and family-serving programs with a law in 2017, and a similar transition timeline as the one we're proposing here. These transitions to consolidation have a streamlined focus and presented opportunities for innovative service coordination in the state. Recent work with MAD and OMB outlined what is needed for successful governance change, with careful attention to planning with dedicated staff, resources, and time, proposed through the work of our transition office, engaging with leaders to secure buy-in, developing the funding and resources needed. Considering this, we put together this proposal for a new Department of Children, Youth, and Families with a transition process and timeline that provides these resources and time to get it right and to adapt with all of you as needed. I'll transition to the proposal. As I do that, I'll just kind of cover again the why. As I alluded to, the governor and lieutenant governor are proposing this new structure to enable a public recognizable face and a clear front door in the state's quest to prioritize children, increased opportunities to maximize and coordinate funding to align outcomes and to convene our leadership, and to sharpen the focus of our current agencies. In accomplishing this why, our leaders agreed to hold principles related to a whole family approach, to consolidate our early childhood programs, and to ease access and improve equitable outcomes. The core programs and structure of the agency focuses on an elevation of Children and Family Services Division at the Department of Human Services, and you'll hear from Assistant Commissioner Brown in a second, and to combine those with Early Learning Services Division from the Department of Education, and youth investments from both the Department of Education and Department of Public Safety. The list of core programs for transfer was thoughtfully identified with a focus on this consolidation of childcare and early learning, family-focused community programs, economic support and food assistance programs, youth opportunity, and older youth investments. The bill language obtains the necessary authorities to establish and operate the new agency. With a two-year transition team in place, a new commissioner on July 1 of 2024, and a transfer of core programs beginning over that next year, none of this is immediate on July 1 of 24, and the bill language and existing authorities allow for adjustments to core programs, which I will speak to specifically momentarily. The bill funds an implementation team and a transition fund, obtaining authority and resources to support the creation, alignment, and launch of this two-year transition process. The transition office will be established on July 1 of this year and responsible for leading the establishment of the new department and planning for the transition of programs to it, including elements related to budget, finance, legal, human resources, IT, policy, and many other functions. For reference, there's more, the slides have the programs listing from the Department of Human Services. The citations are listed in Section 15, subdivision of the bill. It includes the entire Children and Family Services Department, with the exception of a certain housing grant and administration of those grants within the Economic Assistance and Employment Supports Division. The proposal also includes licensing and program integrity functions from the Office of Inspector General at the Department of Human Services for child care and related CFS programs, as well as necessary central office functions for the agency administration. From education, the proposal proposed to move on nearly all of those under Early Learning Service Division and an after-school grant program. And from public safety, the Office of Youth Justice would transfer, aligning the goal to move upstream and focus on prevention and youth supports. I'll end by turning it over to Assistant Commissioner Brown and saying the obvious. The proposal seeks to answer questions and feedback heard for many years. In order to do this right, we need a robust engagement process. We need more specific discussions with local service providers, including schools, tribes, and others. And the way to do that is through dedicated time and capacity. And the time is now. When we have a network of leaders ready to engage, believing that this exercise is important and will lead to better outcomes for our children. I'll now pass it over to Assistant Commissioner Brown.
Good morning, Chair Liebling and members. My name is Tiki Brown, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services. If you're following along on the slides, I'm on slide 17. Having worked in state government over 20 years, one lesson I've learned is for a population or an initiative to be a high priority, it needs a clear champion and a shared vision, especially when it comes to cross-program or cross-agency coordination. We are in a unique moment where leadership are aligned around centering children and decision-making, and believe this new agency will provide sustainability of structure for the state to prioritize children and families. Leaders with significant experience inside and outside state government in running effective programs, change management, and driving outcomes and progress are supportive and ready for this change. DHS takes equity and outcomes for children very seriously, and often the structure and competing priorities prevent the prioritization, representation, and communication structures needed to elevate the needs of children and families internally in the agency, at the legislature, and with our community partners. A new agency would sharpen the focus on children and the work of DHS itself. Specifically, a Department of Children, Youth, and Families will enable the creation of a sustainable central state vision to ensure that Minnesota families are able to reach their full potential. The agency can provide the leadership and coordination needed to support children and families by valuing and implementing research-backed multi-generation approaches, focusing services for adults who play key roles in the lives of children as a source of meaningful, equitable impact, prioritizing impactful economic and food assistance programs, and coordinated implementation of the unified statewide networks of community resource centers. We know that we need to create the structure needed to not only maintain our IT systems that support essential children and family programs, but we also need to create the authority, the collaboration, and leadership structure to center future system transformations with children and their families at the center of modern solutions. While transitioning to these new systems will need to be thoughtful and careful, Combined with the governor's budget proposals to update and modernize many of these systems, we have the opportunity to transform systems and access to family systems and supports. I'll also note that including the full spectrum of age groups for children also means we can prioritize youth with leadership and creating an agency that focuses upstream with youth rather than costly downstream public safety and corrections. A specific principle of the new agency will be the consolidation and coordination of early childhood programs, responding to feedback and progress over the years. Through recent efforts funded by the legislature and administrative efforts like Race to the Top Grant, the Early Childhood Systems Reform Effort, the OLA Report on Early Childhood, and most recently, the work of the Children's Cabinet and Preschool Development Grant, the state has made significant progress in coordinating and aligning early childhood programs and has heard the needs related to this governance shift. Through these efforts and engagement, the new agency will build on our progress by consolidating early childhood programs, resulting in improved outcomes for children, families, and the workforce. Improved coordination for providers, aligned funding prioritization, and a common application or front door for families. We must act in this moment. We have learnings from years of engagement, research in other states, because our state depends on the success of Minnesota children, youth, and families. The creation of this new agency can achieve a clear front door and recognizable public face, improve communication outlets focused on children and families, aligned outcomes for children and families, and improve access for services. We have a plan with the authority, resources, and capacity of the transition office to take our time to do it right and continue to listen and engage with agency staff experts, our tribal and county partners, our community partners, and families. Combined with significant investment in children and families, this department will create a shift that Minnesota needs to ensure equitable outcomes for children from birth to young adulthood. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we have one other person signed up to testify, Amanda Schillinger. Welcome to the committee. If you would just give us your name and affiliation and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. I am Amanda Schillinger. I am a child care center director and a leader with Kids Count on Us. Hello, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. In my 30 plus years in child care, this field has grown and changed so much. As we learn more about the important impact high quality early childhood programs make in the lives of children. Children, their families, and those who care for them deserve a department of children, youth, and families that can prioritize their unique needs. The work directors and owners do to manage child care programs is immense. Each day, we are currently navigating multiple state entities, including Pathway 1 and Pathway 2 scholarships, CCAP, the food program, DEED, MDE, Minnesota Department of Health, school districts, and multiple sectors within DHS, all while providing support to our staff, students, and families. Navigating all of these is inefficient and time-consuming. Over the past 2 weeks, in addition to the regular work the owner and I do, like billing and payroll, managing our food program, fixing a leaky sink, keeping up with required paperwork, teaching because of the teacher shortage, preparing for parent-aware accreditation and licensing renewals, I also needed to search for resources for a child experiencing a mental health crisis, food support for a family whose food benefits weren't enough this month, and help a struggling parent who is moving find beds for her children. And none of these may seem directly related to childcare, but currently we are the most direct contact parents have to finding these services, all of which would be within the bounds of this new department. Creating this new department can simplify the process of connecting families to the resources they desperately need through a common application process, improve the connection between the state, providers, and families by coordinating registration, payments, and regulatory requirements, allow DHS to focus on its primary role as the state Medicaid agency, and give Minnesota providers more time to focus on providing high-quality care to our children and families. It benefits everyone. Child care in Minnesota is in crisis, and if we don't act, the crisis will continue as we lose more providers. So today, I urge you to support the creation of this new department. Imagine the impact we can make in the lives of children when all of you and child care programs and families work together to truly make Minnesota the best state for children and families. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. So that is concludes the presentation and the testimony. So we will move now to member questions and discussion. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking in in the pages 12, 13, 14, 15, I'm seeing the Department of Education, the Department of Public Safety, the Department or DHS. I'm not seeing the Department of Health. Is there someplace else? Because that the other ones are sections 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, Representative Quam, I think the Department of Health, to my knowledge, is not in here, but just to be clear with everyone, because our committee has the central office of DHS under our jurisdiction right now, we're a little bit misnamed. We're really kind of Health and Human Services. So, you know, that's why the bill is here. But I don't know if you're asking specifically about the health department being involved. We can go to Representative Pinto.
Madam Chair, it wasn't that it wasn't under our purview. It was during part of the discussion, they were presenting that the Department of Health was, you know, part of. Of course, there are groups and entities within the Department of Health. I assume that fall into this, but I'm not seeing it specifically in there, even though it is mentioned that it would be including transfers from the Department of Health. So if we can just understand why it's not in that subdivision. Yeah.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Quam. The chair is accurate. Her description of this is correct, that programs in the Department of Health are not contemplated as moving within the bill. If there was a comment about health, that may have been either misunderstand or miscommunication or something. Maybe just talking about, you know, improving the well-being of children in general, but I'm not sure. Representative Quam, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On 1116, it's in the list of departments that must transfer all the responsibilities, you know.
Oh.
So that's what got me is all the other departments listed right there have a subdivision that follows.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Quam, that is an excellent catch, sir, because that is the bill as introduced listed one program that is actually not even a currently funded program, Department of Health. That was since removed in the committee process, but we clearly missed a word there. So that is something that we will that reference will be removed as the bill moves forward, and I appreciate you catching it. There are not programs in the Department of Health that would need to be moved under this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I like the idea of one call for all questions. You know, that's a good thing to do. But I understand there's a lot of overlapping and I'm wondering, what are you seeing as the main efficiencies that you're gaining? And my concern also steps into the IT of internal resources versus minute. And I'm assuming that you're going to have interaction with the department systems and databases that they're coming from, even after it's separated because of that interaction. So I'd just like to get a feel what the plan and roadmap are, because unfortunately we've had more than a few examples of where rolling out new IT situations have caused years of pain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, since as we get into the IT systems, we get increasingly far from my area of expertise. We've got an expert testifier here, potentially, or Commissioner Bailey.
Okay, Commissioner Bailey.
Sure. Chair Liebling and Representative, I will turn it over to my colleague Ty from Minute, but I'll just say at the front end that we have your right, and appreciate you pointing it out, and we've been working very hard on this question to ensure that, and I think experience, how those efficiencies are absolutely essential into providing good services and efficient services for children and families in Minnesota. And so the Commissioner Tomes has created sort of a core leadership structure and team that we've been working with in partnership the whole time. So I don't know, Ty, if there's anything you want to add. But.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair and Representative. I'm Tyrone Spratt. I'm the Chief Business Technology Officer. Supporting the new creation of this Department of Children, Youth, and Family. As it relates to the IT systems at DHS, our intention is to really have a shared governance structure in the early days of this new department. So we really are looking at how do we bring in this new department and provide them the access to the systems in order to do the work that the programs require. And so that's our intention and our plan as it stands right now.
All right, thank you. And Representative Palmer, I have three other members already on the list. So
right, and Madam Chair, if you and others, I think we need to really focus so that we don't stumble, on this peripheral thing of the IT because it's not trivial.
Thank you, Representative Backer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and. Representative Pinto, I have two questions. I have more, but I'm going to limit it down to two. How do we do the transfer? You know, we're taking parts from each department. This is what I understand. We're making a new agency. So we have, how do we get through that contractual part? Because if we have person A, working for DHS and now comes over to this new bureaucracy. How do we handle that? And at the end of the day, when I look through this, we have a good working relationship, I really see an increase in bureaucracy instead of a better, efficient way of handling delivering services. That would be my first question, if you could address that, Representative Pinto, Chair Pinto.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Backer. So first of all, one thing I think that may not have been quite so clear is that what this really consists of, it's a spinoff of the Children and Family Services Division of DHS, with the great bulk of the employees and programs really coming from there. And then it's the Early Learning Office of MDE, which works very closely with portions of Children and Family Services, and then a quite small office from DPS. So just in terms of sort of as you're thinking about it, it really is actually taking a pre-existing division and essentially establishing it as a new agency with these offices with whom it works pretty closely connecting. And then regarding kind of how that process of transition works, I don't know if Commissioner Bailey may have thoughts on that. I think it'll become clear over the course of the next, part of the reason for the transition period over the next year, Representative Backer, is for MMB to kind of report back to us, this report that's due next spring. It's at the very back of the bill with a lot of information about kind of exactly how that transition will happen. It doesn't even start till summer of 2024, so we have quite a while to kind of figure out precisely how that process is going to work.
Representative Backer?
Okay, then my next question. And you can, I can talk offline. I have quite a few questions on that. But, you know, when we work with child care, we do get involved with medical assistance. And I understand that at the state, we can only have one agency, and correct me if I'm wrong, that can handle medical assistance. So in essence now, we will have two. We have DHS that would handle issues with medical assistance, and then this new department would be handling, obviously, with children, because there's medical assistance programs that help our, which rightfully so, we want that. Am I understanding that correctly, or how do we balance that? Because at the end of the day, we just don't want to grow good government. We want to provide better service. That is my goal. You and I have same passion for better child care, you know, with your prior work and my prior work. So if you could help me out with that, and that's my last question. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Backer. So MA-funded programs will entirely remain within DHS. I see the Commissioner nodding. So although you're right that any time you're interacting with children, there could be a medical assistance piece of it, and that could be true for child care as well, then MA pieces remain entirely with DHS. So we don't have that problem of multiple agencies. And happy to talk with you further about the concerns and questions you have as well.
Thank you. So we have Schumacher, Nadeau, and Bonner. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just One quick question on this. This is the first time I've seen where we've done something like this to break it apart in my time here, and I know I proposed several different breakups of the AFAS in the past, but just reading through this, I noticed there's no repealers in here. Is that kind of premature for this stage in the process? It's more out of curiosity. It's not a full policy question, but why aren't there any repealers in this yet?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Schumacher, I guess that probably is early days yet. We've got another whole legislative session before the agency would even, in theory, start work. You have a commissioner start in July of 24 and two whole legislative sessions before it's in fully operational, if all goes according to plan, in July 25. So, yeah, I think that just would be premature to be repealing sections of statute at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you. I've got a couple of specific questions, and I've got a general one regarding implementation. So the specific ones, I didn't look at all the statutes of all the agencies and programs that are being transferred, but when I started looking at the public safety ones, because I think that's the outlier in this particular bill. And let me just start by saying I think that trying to align these things is a good idea. I really do. I think it's going to be incredibly difficult, but I think it's a good idea to try. So, I mean, there's numbers of advisory bodies that have been appointed to these organizations. Will the advisory bodies also then be transferred to this new agency? These are appointments that the governor makes. These are appointments from whatever. Will the advisory bodies also be transferred to this new state agency, Madam Chair?
That's it.
Chair Liebling and Representative, if they tied specifically to that program, I think at this point our understanding would be that they would move, but I'll just cite back to having really kind of a planned process. I think there might be examples where for various reasons we would, you know, make a different decision in consultation with others. But, I mean, yeah, the plan would be that those advisory bodies, so those specific programs, would move along with them.
And following specifically up with that, you know, there's also in a lot of these programs where there's administrative costs that are spelled out in statute that allow the commissioner to capture that administrative cost, a percentage. Would that also, in your opinion, be transferring to this new agency? Because it would be a cut to the current, you know, current DHS or DPS or whatever. Would those administrative cost allocations also be transferring?
Yeah, Chair Liebling and Representative, I mean, for the most part, the answer is yes. I would say that's why we have a planned process, though. You're getting into kind of some of the why that dedicated time and capacity. We've begun looking at that for some of the programs under Assistant Commissioner Brown, for instance. Part of what we've been working through in the committee process is making sure that we have that process set up so that the appropriate kind of cost allocation components would be able to be set up to come with the new agency, the associated programs.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that. And now I'm going to go kind of more general. And I love that you guys have looked at competing regions as models. I think that's good. I don't think Washington is a great model for Minnesota to look at, to be honest. But I think it's important to look at what's there. I think Minnesota has a very unique way that we deliver services, far different from any state that I've ever looked at and reviewed. And that strength is in our counties. I mean, our counties deliver these services. Our counties have incredible relationships with those direct service providers. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to the counties or the state in this case, but we are payers. That's what we do. We pay. It's the direct service providers that deliver those services, be it if it's juvenile justice, criminal diversion programs, be it child care, you know, whatever it is. We are payers. And as soon as we start talking about aligning, you know, the chairs on the deck of the ship and realigning them and whatever, I think we have to be super, super cognizant that we may think it's more efficient, but at the end of the day, the providers, what will they ultimately get? Will it be easier for them to work with DHS versus this new agency? Because honestly, it's not easy to work with DHS. I mean, just think about the, you know, the reforms that we've done with DSS and ES over the past, you know, over the past year. This is brutal, and it's very difficult. So I look at the idea of this, and I really like it. I think it's I don't think that we've actually spent the time dealing with those direct service providers to find out, is this going to be more efficient? Is it going to provide better services for our children and families? And are we aligning the right, you know, the right organizations? And we talk about public safety things, you know, it's adoption and resettlement. I mean, now we're bringing in the courts. I mean, and DHS and it doesn't deal with the courts. Counties deal with the courts. You know, they're the ones that actually align and work hand in hand to provide those efficiencies. And I don't see where the efficiencies in this bill at the state level are going to transfer to efficiencies at the delivery, at the grassroots level. That's my problem. So if you want to spend some time, Representative Pinto, again, I love the idea of this. I just can't. I'm having a hard time seeing the fulfillment of those ideas. And luckily, you know, I think the consequences of doing it wrong, I don't think are all that terrible in this, unlike the next bill we're going to hear. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you think the implementation of this is actually going to improve outcomes for kids and families.
Thank you, Charlie Bling, and thanks, Representative Dodeau. So one thing I'll try to send this to you to direct your attention to. There was a 2018 OLA report that talked about, and you know, my background in particular focuses on early childhood, which is a substantial part of this new agency. Not all of it though, a lot of other pieces as well, as you've referenced. But that report examined how badly the current system is working for providers. You talk about the challenge of working with DHS, but actually that talks about the challenges of working, as we heard from the testifier, with both DHS and MDE, with very, very similar programs that have slightly different eligibility and slightly all kinds of different challenges. I thought that the testifier did a terrific job of just describing the experience of providers in that particular area. The hope is, the vision is, and I thought Assistant Commissioner Brown did a terrific job in this as well, identifying that if you're really going to make change, effective change, at a kind of policy level, you need to have a champion, you need to have a vision. It's something that is really challenging to have when you have these programs that relate to child development and getting kids off to a great start, not just in the early years, but all the way through, having them in different places, in different pieces. That has worked out really badly for providers. And so I'm supportive of this proposal, and certainly can turn it to the commissioner with, if there's time. But I'm really excited about the administration's proposal, with the expectation that actually aligning these programs will improve things for the people who serve families, and of course, for even more importantly, serving families and kids directly. That's the vision, and that's the hope.
Okay, let's go then to Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Pinto. So I just wanted to quickly kind of go back around on two points. One, on the IT piece, I do want to say that I was sat in on some of the early the cabinet meetings for our children. And I will say one of the things that came out immediately is the fact that a lot of our systems are fragmented. They're just not working for families. And as a result, a lot of kids are falling through the cracks. They're falling through the cracks in the foster care system. They're falling through the cracks in the child care system. They're falling through the cracks in early childhood education and development at a time when we have an opportunity to invest in our kids and set them up for life. And we know that the finances, let's talk finances for a second. Every dollar we spend in early childhood and get kids off to a good start, we save exponentially 7 times, 8 times on the back end by doing that. But we're not doing a good job. The system is really difficult to navigate for providers. It's difficult for early childhood providers. And we have to do better. Having a mission and a focus that focuses on kids and families is important. It matters where we put our focus. And we have done a lousy job. Let's just be honest. But on the IT front, one of the important things, and I actually appreciate Representative Quam bringing this forward, is that we do have to have a really good integrated system. I do know that in those meetings, we have had conversations, and thank you for having our CTO here, with Minute about how we have an integrated approach that actually gets at the whole family and the whole child and how we connect all the pieces so that we can do that efficiently and effectively in a person-centered approach, or in this case, a child-centered approach or a family-centered approach. And that's the key piece. I do know that the work is being done. I do know about the conversations around the Children's Cabinet happening within the Technical Advisory Committee, which is a compilation of state agencies, public and private partnerships from Fortune 500 companies, all coming at and swarming around a problem and saying, how do we make government work better for real people and real citizens? And they're doing that work. So I feel confident that we're getting down that road into the right place. And I do think that we have too many cracks right now, too many places for kids to fall in between. And it's happening. We've had these discussions about the foster care system. We've had the discussions about early childhood learning and development and childhood education and how kids aren't getting what they need, how families aren't getting what they need. We've got to get a better approach. And so I really do appreciate this bill. I appreciate the fact that we are really going to focus like a laser on families, on children, and say, how do we do better? And how do we make systems that support that initiative as well? And until we do that, those kiddos are going to still fall through the cracks. And so I appreciate you bringing this forward. And I do know that the IT work is being done, but I also appreciate the comments from my colleagues on making sure that we are focusing, laser focused, on making sure those things happen. And thank you to our CTO for being a part of that initiative. I really appreciate your help in making that a reality.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bonner. So we need to kind of wrap this up. So first I want to ask Mr. Harney to say a word about the finances here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chair Pinto's committee omnibus bill for the House Committee on Children and Families Finance provided for approximately $14 million in appropriations to Minnesota Management and Budget in the upcoming biennium for planning related to the new department.
Okay, and then Mr. Harney, this the updated bill, though, there's been no change in fiscal estimate based on the...
Madam Chair, no change.
Okay, thank you. So, you know, I just want to make a couple of comments and then we're going to lay the bill over. I mean, first of all, you know, let me be very clear here. I'm not completely sold on this idea. I've been really clear with everyone about that. And I've appreciated some of the comments and concerns I've heard. I do want to say, I think understanding and appreciating that we have a problem does not make this the ideal solution. And I do want to point people to, I think in the slideshow, one of the things that was noted was this report that was done based on 2021 legislation. I just have the executive summary in my hands here, but it's available for everyone. State-level governance for early childhood programs. And so, you know, in 2021, instead of going ahead with this proposal, we asked to have this study done. And the study, you know, is does not say do this. It has pros and cons. It says, you know, I was going to talk more about this, but we're pretty much out of time. But states use different methods. There's no clear governance structure that's sort of the silver bullet here. And one of the things that it does says is determine the purpose and priorities first, not the governance approach. Settle on purpose and a few key issues, lay out measures that will affect them, then determine whether governance will likely be a solution. So I do have concerns that although we all want to fix certain problems and we could agree on what the problems are, I'm not sure that this is the way to fix them. And in fact, I think there's significant risk here, honestly. I just really want to be straightforward about that. I do have some actually more specific questions, which I won't go into here, but some of the things that are, I'll just kind of point them out. We can talk more offline about them, and I've appreciated the opportunity to do that up till this point. But this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. So some of the things that are proposed to be moved, for example, Minnesota, this is on line 13.17, Minnesota Food Shelf Program under Minnesota Statute Section 256E.34. So I looked up that section. It doesn't say anything about children. It's just our general food shelf program. Another one, line 13.21, resettlement programs under Minnesota Statute Section 256B06, Subdivision 6. Doesn't say anything about kids. It's about resettlement for, I guess, families. I mean, my point is that wherever you draw the line, you're always splitting apart things that could go together. And I personally would rather see us work on that than, as somebody said, move the deck chairs. I hope that's not what we're doing. I really hope, because our kids and our families deserve better than that, as Representative Bonner really said so ably. So there is that. I am also concerned, and I will ask this one question. We have just gone through, or we're in the middle of the budgeting process for DHS. For the central office, we have a book of change pages. Some of them pertain to IT. I didn't see a single one of those changes that mentioned that there was going to be a new agency and how the budget proposals pertain to the new agency. And I'm concerned from what I just heard about from Mr. Harney, you know, the budget for this is only for the first biennium. The proposals we're working on also have tails. I'm just not really, I'm concerned that, you know, how this works with, you know, that there's nothing, as I'm seeing, for future costs for this agency, if it's assumed that it's going to all be the same cost as it is now, and that none of the proposals that we're working on, where we're planning to, you know, proposing to put significant funds into IT and other things, none of that really comes with a plan for it to move over to the new agency. So I would just note that it gives me a little heartburn. I don't know if we really can't spend time on that now, but just kind of want to lay that out there. So thank you. I really appreciate the work. I appreciate that everyone shares a concern around kids and their futures in this state, because that is really what we should be focusing on. And I just want to make sure that we, as we go forward, that we do better and not worse. For the very people that we want to help. So with that, I'm going to give Representative Pinto a final word, and then we will lay the bill over.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thanks for the time and expertise that you've shared in particular, and thank you, members. And this has been the result of a lot of work over several years, in particular by the administration, even since the report referenced by the Chair. And I know we'll continue to have conversations, and very much look forward to that. And thank you again, Chair.
All right, and with that, House File 2323, as amended, is laid over. All right, we will now move, and just so members are aware, we have to be on the floor at 10:10, so we're going to try to move right along here. And so we're going to move now House File 402, which is back before the committee. We've heard this bill before. And Representative Bierman is going to move that House File 402, the second engrossment, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Bierman has a DE3-6 amendment. And so I assume, Representative Bierman, that you want to move that right away to get this in shape.
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Okay, so that amendment has been moved, the DE3-6, which is in your packet. So all in favor of adoption of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So Representative Bierman, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for taking the time to review House File 402 again. Since it was here last time, it has been to further committee stops. And there have been numerous consultations with stakeholders, and substantial changes have been made. We have more conversations to come, and I just wanted to extend an invite. I welcome continued support input from members to help find a functional balance between the goals of the bill and the needed compliance requirements. Substantial changes to note are: the merger review process has been reduced to 90 days. The transaction threshold has been raised to $40 million. Transfer of share ownership notification has been raised to 40%. Rulemaking has been eliminated. The purpose of the bill remains, and that is to actively review the ever-changing healthcare medical system as it evolves. We as policymakers must understand the market landscape and the impact mergers and acquisitions will deliver. We work to create a system that will improve the health outcomes of all our constituents by increasing access, affordability, and quality of care across the state. We stand at the intersection of corporate health services meeting public health requirements. Concerted action is needed. We have some incredible partners in Minnesota. Partners in private practice, nonprofit organizations, dedicated professionals in our governmental agencies, and the committed legislators at this table today. And I don't want to be remiss and leave out the lobbyists and the stakeholders who often help us view the issues more broadly and help reveal their true complexity. We are starting from a good place by many metrics, but we have much work to do. Members, we need the ability to measure the effects and outcomes of the system being built and make our constituent interests paramount in the continuum of public health to healthcare services. House File 402 will provide a critical portal for our future view of the medical care system. Just a quick review of what is in this bill. It had three parts, remember. There's the return of charitable assets in certain circumstances, how the legislature can address the impact of mergers and acquisitions of healthcare entities on public interest and public health, and number three, the issue of the health maintenance organization conversions from nonprofit to for-profit. Today, I will focus more on the impact of the mergers and the acquisitions of healthcare entities on our communities. The high costs of healthcare are attributable to many sources. Consolidation is only one of them. The adverse impacts of healthcare consolidation can be felt throughout the United States, in our businesses, our economy, our healthcare premiums, our wages, and in our healthcare decision making. The repercussions of high cost affect us all. Research, as noted before, from the Milman Institute and many other sources have repeatedly shown that consolidation results in higher prices. Costs for patients tend to rise between 10 to 40% with emerging entities. Adjacent medical providers also tend to impose higher prices. Studies also indicate that mergers have resulted in a lower quality patient experience and frequently lead to local essential services being reduced or even eliminated. House File 402 will set some standards from which to gauge the value of a merger to the local market. The first being, will a merger or acquisition be in the public interest? Meaning, will it improve access, promote quality health outcomes, while moderating the unsustainable cost increases? These are measurable and desirable outcomes for all our constituents. Members, as I mentioned before, 29 states have some level of oversight of medical merger transactions. In Minnesota, relying solely on Federal Trade Commission watchdogs or our Attorney General to monitor anti-competitive and charitable asset violation alone will not be enough to provide either insight nor oversight of our medical landscape. The bill before you today will establish that process of notice, review, and approval of mergers and acquisitions organized around our Minnesota Department of Health and the Office of the Attorney General. Presently, mergers and acquisitions are too often viewed as simply a business transaction. And I will repeat that I know there is a belief by many that the market cures all ills. Anyone serving on this committee, most people in the audience, anyone who's navigated the healthcare system would acknowledge that there are gaps, that our healthcare system needs work, reform, and change. Many people on both sides of the aisle have called our system broken. Mergers too often result in closure of local clinics and the loss of critical healthcare services. Access to local primary care is critical for well-being. How many of you know someone who must travel further for medical care when clinics and hospitals have closed? Studies show that people not connected to a local primary doctor often, more often, have their conditions worsen, resulting in higher utilization of emergency rooms and hospitalization. This tracks with the updated report from the National Academy of Sciences titled Shorter Lives, Poorer Health. It states that Americans currently have a healthcare disadvantage compared to other industrialized nations. A study from the McGlynn Foundation estimated that only 54% of Americans receive the recommended services for their condition. Members, our system is underperforming. Despite the country's enormous level of per capita spending on healthcare, which far exceeds any other country. And just to be clear, the data shows that even highly advantaged Americans under age 75 fare worse than their counterparts in other industrialized nations on most measures of health. Bill 402 provides an opportunity to analyze more data, view the market holistically, and make some decisions to pursue a better statewide health infrastructure to improve health access for Minnesotans, no matter where you reside. In the United States of America, we lead the world in biomedical research, cutting-edge medical technology. We have some of the world-leading medical hospitals and medical systems, and yet, due to coordination problems in a highly fragmented system of government and private sector entities, we lag other nations in health outcomes. There is a difference between what is needed and what is being created. Our goal must be longer lives, better health. To get there, we need a reformation of preventative care, and we need to take a proactive approach to the impacts of mergers and medical consolidation headed our way at an ever-accelerating speed. Madam Chair, I'd be ready for some testifiers, please.
Thank you very much, Representative Bierman. So first on the list is Justin Stoffron. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Liebling and committee members. My name is Justin Stoffron. I'm the Anti-Monopoly Director for the Minnesota Farmers Union. I appreciate the opportunity to be back before the committee in support of this legislation. I won't repeat my prior comments from the other week. I just really wanted to say that I think that the big picture here of this legislation is that we need these protections, and it's not a dramatic departure from existing law or existing authority. It's really, in many ways, because of how far removed, because of lax enforcement, because of court interpretations, how far removed we've gotten from the original intent of our anti-monopoly protections, that legislation like this is so important, both in healthcare and across the economy. And so I really appreciate Representative Bierman's work on this. We know he's been working hard with the Attorney General's office and other stakeholders to make tweaks to the language. I'll echo what I believe our friends at the Nurses Association will say, and that we hope to continue working with Representative Bierman on some additional language tweaks to make sure that this legislation provides strong protections for healthcare workers, for patients, for Minnesotans from the negative impacts of consolidation and monopoly power in our healthcare system. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Dan Baglio. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Baglio, and I'd like to thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses Association. MNA's membership includes over 22,000 registered nurses, meaning 4 out of every 5 nurses working at the bedside in hospitals across Minnesota are MNA members. MNA strongly supports House File 402 because it provides the state with the authority and tools desperately needed to protect patients, communities, healthcare workers, and our entire state healthcare delivery system from the harms caused by consolidation. This bill is a priority for MNA because healthcare consolidation continues to force nurses and other healthcare workers into situations where they're being asked to do more and more with less and less. This corporatization of healthcare is hurting patients and workers, and we need regulations like the ones included in this bill. We're very supportive of extending the moratorium on HMO conversion, as well as the study, and we're happy that they're included in this bill. We continue to have some recommendations for improving this bill. Specifically, we are still asking to see explicit language included that would protect existing bargaining units from the types of union-busting activities that we know often happen during mergers and transactions. We'd hope to see that included in the amendment language. We're happy to continue talking to Representative Bierman along the way. With that, I'd just really like to thank Representative Bierman for his leadership on taking on this enormous issue, as well as Chair Liebling and members of the committee.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Aaron Conti. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Aaron Conti, an Assistant Attorney General. Madam Chair and members, in the interest of time, since I have already spoken with you all about the need for this legislation, I will just be here for any questions.
That sounds great. So we have a couple of members on the list here. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bierman. Thanks for the changes that you made. My first question has to do with the $40 million cap. What work was done to identify the number of providers, groups that would now be excluded from that, the difference between the 10 and the 40 million? And it doesn't, I don't need actual numbers, Madam Chair. I was just thinking of percentages. Did it exclude 50%, 60%, 10%?
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the question, and I wanted to consult just a little bit because that's one thing I haven't spoken with the Attorney General about. However, I have been meeting numerous stakeholder groups, and when I put that number out there, you know, they gladly accepted that as something that would be a positive development. They continue to push for a much higher number, of course, and I think that we're looking at other states that have put in similar policies and still working on that number, but I think that it was well received by many of the groups I've been meeting with, but I meet with some more next week too.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that, Representative Bierman. I appreciate the way that you've approached this. You've always been very open and willing to talk about, you know, anything that someone is concerned with. So my biggest concern currently, you know, I remember how this bill started, you know, and it's grown significantly since then. I don't know if we've ever gotten back to, you know, trying to identify the public, you know, the monetized value of a public asset, but I think that you're probably still going to work on that, and I won't belabor it. As you've gone through, we've heard testifiers, you know, talk about the mergers and acquisitions and consolidations, and you've mentioned on a couple of occasions that it always results in increased costs, and that's true. I mean, nationwide, that is true. These consolidations result in increased costs, but it's not because of the consolidation. It's because the providers or the managed care organizations are hemorrhaging money. The rates would have been higher anyway. I mean, no one wants to be merged in these things. This is not a good, it's not a good thing, it's a bad thing. So that being said, we know and we've heard from and testifiers that with these big financial transactions, and I don't think that the AG really is the body to be adjudicating these things. I think that this is a heavy-handed approach, but I'm going to stick with the health component of this bill. Is, as you move forward, are you going to start identifying and really trying to hone in and capturing those things that have resulted in those increased costs? We know that enable to handle those financial pressures and continuing to provide care, providers and care organizations, those are the things that this bill is consolidating. Are we going to start identifying some of those things and evaluating what those costs and drivers are that are pushing these organizations to the point of having to consolidate? Because that's what they're doing. They're being forced to consolidate. If we paid, you know, we wouldn't have some of these problems. So are you going to start going into more of the financial data to support this proposal?
So before I go to Representative Bierman. So Representative Ryer is next on the list, and she's doing more work in this space. But go ahead, Representative Bierman.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Very good question. And I think it goes right to the heart of what the bill is, a big piece of the bill. It is to gain a better understanding. And at the beginning, you talked about, you know, the driver has been that entities have to be bought out in many cases, which there's truth to that. But there's also other reasons that costs go up. And I'm not saying, implying or stating that the only reason there are price increases is because of mergers. Obviously, inflation. Obviously, products and services go up in price. So there is an sort of an accepted amount of price increase throughout the economy. It's just that we're seeing it much faster and higher in a lot of healthcare certain aspects. And so when we see prices, and I can't even point to a place in Minnesota where it's jumped 40% because of a merger, but that is the trend. That is what happens nationwide, as the studies show. But it is not the only cause of that price increase. And I do acknowledge there are price increases from other reasons. But going back to the second point then is, will this help address that and help us? It will help us to analyze that cost differential. And it will also only be one thing that the Attorney General would look at to ascertain whether a merger is in the public interest or not. There's a whole myriad of issues and events that might determine that. But also, you mentioned heavy-handed approach. I will just point out that in states where this is going on and has been going on, for some states a very short time, other states like Massachusetts, where it's been in play for 10 years, there's really only been one time when they have stopped a transaction that I'm aware of. So in most of them, this is just beginning this process to get us that information which you referred to, so we have a clearer picture of what's driving those costs in this area, and ascertaining, again, the value of quality assessments, cost of care, network adequacy in many cases, and making sure that there's not monopoly situations transpiring. So there's also, I think I will, you know, just also mention, there's a lot of outside entities that are coming in and investing in healthcare per se across the country, which are not necessarily simply because those entities being taken over are not making it. There's value in healthcare because there's money in healthcare. And so we're seeing that even in Minnesota with equity-driven funds that are making inroads. And we're going to see more of it. So this is the time to get this set up so that we have a better insight into all of that.
All right. Just quickly.
Very quickly, because yes. We have two more members and not much time.
All right, and thank you, Madam Chair. And as I mentioned, the consequences of getting this wrong mm-hmm. are dramatic. And so I hope that you slow this thing down. You know, that we continue to talk about it rather than, you know, blowing it through and saying we're going to figure it out later and we're going to hope that it works. But like I say, the consequences of being wrong here are drastic in Minnesota. So thank you. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bierman. If I may, I will first comment that the House file 2202, which I carried for the Healthcare Affordability Board and which is included in the budget bill, goes to the heart of your question about what's driving costs, and I could talk about that all day. I would love to have a follow-up conversation with you about that. My question is about the notice period, going from 180 days to 90 days, and I have a couple of questions about that. What drove that for one thing, and if that's a consistent level of time for a new entrant to the Minnesota market versus a well-established known quantity with no issues in Minnesota, and then also the implications for the review that you need to do on the Attorney General's side and how that all plays together. Thank you.
Okay, can you do that really briefly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to, Representative Ryer, I'm just going to let the Assistant let AG answer that one. Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair and Representative Fryer, thank you for the question. So when I was here last, I think I mentioned that the notice period was expanding kind of in proportion to the complexity of these transactions. So Minnesota AG's office looks at certain nonprofit transactions in a period of 45 days with an opportunity to expand. And this is really a case of the author and constituencies kind of asking whether there was some flexibility in that 180 days that was originally brought forward, and everyone kind of circling to think about what would give adequate, you know, whether that was really a proportionate increase. So we have pared back with an eye to being able to get the work done. We retain that flexibility to expand on with some additional number of days. I believe it's 60, but I'm having a Monday moment this Tuesday. And so there will be that flexibility, but also the ability to review according to the complexity of the transaction.
Representative Breyer.
Thank you. Appreciate the response.
Okay. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, when you're analyzing the loss or the cost and et cetera, the state is already very active in preventing or controlling whether national entities can come in the high specialty areas where there's a high markup or profit so that our hospitals and healthcare centers don't lose that, because there's so much cost shifting that that's a big issue. And with that, if prices are going up a lot, and previously one of the entities was losing millions of dollars, obviously they didn't have a income stream to stay in business. So therefore, if they, you know, had a 10% loss, in order to be just break even, they'd have to have increased their charging by 10%. I'm not hearing a lot of discussion about looking at the drivers of the merger activity, because what we need in Minnesota is survivability of our health care facilities. And instead of only focusing on, well, we want to make sure that the two wrong people don't get together or something nefarious, let's look at why we're being driven to this point. Because I'd prefer not to have our entities merging in order to survive. So I understand what you're trying to do, prevent bad actors. I would hope that more of us worked at preventing bad situations that are causing the problem. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. There wasn't a question in there, so I'm going to go to Representative Bierman for a final word.
Yeah.
And, Ms. Conti, if you want to say something, it's fine.
Yeah, okay. Madam Chair, Ms. Conti would like to.
Okay. I will be very brief, Madam Chair and Representative. A couple of the questions today have focused on this kind of what is driving the merger activity, and it is certainly important, and the AGO watching all of this consolidation is concerned about it as well. But I do want to be clear, this bill, we are mostly just trying to make sure that when these mergers are happening, that we have enough time and resources and flexibility to address problem mergers. So when we look at Harvard Business Review, when we look at FTC data, when we look at Kaiser Foundation data, we know that at some portion of these transactions, the merger activity itself is extracting additional cost increases, additional monopoly type pressure, pushing up costs. It is those types of things, problematic consolidation, that the enforcement piece of this bill is dealing with. It is not envisioning kind of creating an all-powerful attorney general, and it is still pushing all of these decisions about what is ultimately problematic to a court to have that best interest analysis performed there in court, where judges are often asked to make comprehensive equity decisions around best interests. Thank you.
All right. And final word, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the good discussion on this bill. And as I mentioned at the start, I do want to hear more of your thoughts on it. So please do reach out, or I'll drop into your office, too. Thank you.
Well, thank you. you again, Representative Bierman, for all your work on this. So with that, Representative Bierman is going to renew his motion that House File 402, the second engrossment as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. So thank you, Representative Bierman. So members, with that, I'm glad we finished just a few minutes early because this is our last regularly scheduled meeting of this committee.
No.
I know.
What?
Those of you who haven't been here before don't maybe fully appreciate how your lives are going to change now after the break. That's going to be very different. It is possible we could have a meeting, you know, if there's something for us to hear and consider, that can always happen. But we are more or less done. We're done with our regular meeting for the session. So it is time. I really, before we adjourn today, I really want to thank everyone. First of all, we don't have most of our nonpartisan staff are not here today, but I think you all have, I hope, grown to appreciate how amazingly hardworking and smart they are and how much they help us and make the wheels turn here. I just really can't thank them enough. I know it's been particularly difficult. So I know Ms. Clark, this is here, Mr. Harney, our fiscal staff. They've just done amazing work. And those who are not in the room as well. And I know I'll miss them if I start listing them. But Mr. Chun, Ms. Sunderman, Ms. Punelli, who was here for a while. Did I miss somebody in the list there? Anyway, and others actually who don't sit here all the time as well, who come and help us periodically, Mr. Johnson, for example. Anyway, really appreciate the work. Also, of course, we have our partisan staff who help us incredibly all through. And so Joe Durheim, the DFL partisan research, and who's been very, very helpful. And Jonathan Cotter, who I know has been extremely helpful to the members on that side. We really appreciate your work. It really helps us all be better and do our work here. And then, of course, I want to acknowledge our committee staff who have been just amazing. So Josh Sandy, who's our committee administrator, who has been hit by the fire hose big time this coming in new this session, and he's just done a wonderful job and has just so grown into the job. It's been so helpful to me. And of course, Krista Niederhofer, who's been our committee legislative assistant now for some time, and Maya Lay for even longer, and is just the most knowledgeable person around. If anything, you know, she just has all of that wisdom and knowledge from all that time. So also, I just want to thank all of the members. I mean, the members on both sides, I think you have all done very good work. I think our discussions have been productive and helpful, and we're not done with that. We're just moving into a different phase. But I really want to thank all of you for your committed work here in the committee. And with that, I really just want to thank everyone. So it's been a great pleasure. And with that, we stand adjourned.